Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right. Here we go. Kicking things off Jaguars Today on this Thursday morning. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. Let's not forget about T.J. Yeldon, Tony, shall we, huh? Chris Ivory got some love last night, and hey, it's good to see. Look, it's just for fun. It's for conversation. It's for sports radio people, if nothing else, right? To put out the NFL Top 100 list, 10 every week. It's something to kick around and debate, and we will do that today with Chris Ivory popping up as the third Jaguar so far in the Top 100. Last week saw Alan Hearns and Telvin Smith get some love in the 80s, and this week in the 70s, number 78, Chris Ivory. So we'll get to that today. We'll talk about his place in the National Football League and his role with the Jacksonville Jaguars with our poll of the day. I'm addicted to the Twitter poll now, Tony. I've got to have one every day. It's just that instant feedback. I got to know that people are out there paying attention to what's going on with Jaguar football in the offseason. Yesterday's poll, a runaway victory. Which four-game stretch on the Jags' 2016 schedule is the toughest? And we broke the season into quarters, and as we said at the end of the show yesterday, it was running and hiding. The first four games garnered 74% of the 280-plus votes that we got in this. Green Bay, San Diego, Baltimore, Indy pulled in 74%, 11% for the second quarter. Chicago, Oakland, Tennessee, Kansas City, three of those on the road. 9% for the third quarter of the season. Houston at Detroit, at Buffalo, and then Denver at home, and then the final quarter of the season where you get the AFC South three times. Along with the Minnesota Vikings, who was only 6% of the vote. Today is a lot simpler, Tony. Who is going to have the more impactful season? Which Jaguar running back? Will it be Chris Ivory or T.J. Yeldon? You can define impactful for yourself however you want, right? But obviously, it's an impact on the success of the team. It's got to be factored in there somewhere. You can go to @MD_1010XL. I've tweeted that out. Fat Tony has retweeted it @1010XL Fat Tony, @1010XL Tyler. It's all out there on Twitter for you. I didn't expect Chris Ivory to be in the top 100. You know, I wouldn't, if before the top 100 was revealed, would you say Chris Ivory will be in there? But if you're coming up with a short list of Jaguars and which guys were in the national public consciousness, Tony, and how much it's easy to garner attention when you're a guy with the ball in your hands, whether it's a quarterback, a wide receiver, running back, tight end, than it is at almost any other position. Those are the guys that make the SportsCenter highlights. I'm certainly, as we discussed with Jeff a minute ago, not surprised that Chris Ivory found his way in the top 100.
No, I'm really not. And look, he's one of, we've said it since we started having this discussion, but he's one of seven guys in the NFL that rushed for 1,000 yards last year. Now, I'm not saying that I'm convinced that everybody that rushed for 1,000 yards last year is going to be on the list. I'm not sure that that's true.
McFadden won't be.
I don't know how many fans out there could even tell you the seven guys who actually rushed for 1,000 yards last year. A lot of them are easy. You know, everyone knows it's going to be Adrian Peterson. Everyone knows Todd Gurley did it. Doug Martin's a name that I think people forget even the year after he had a big 1,400-yard season.
I would have gotten Martin earlier than I might have gotten Latavius Murray.
But Latavius Murray, Devonta Freeman's going to be on the list because he was a sensation when he was healthy last year.
He stuck in there with just over 1,000. He did a lot of damage catching the football
as well. But those are your guys. AP, Doug Martin, Todd Gurley, Darren McFadden, Chris Ivory was fifth in the league in rushing. Latavius Murray and Devonta Freeman. And I'm not convinced that McFadden and Murray are going to be on that list. I think there's a better chance that Murray is than McFadden is when everything is said and done. So I don't think it necessarily rushing for 1,000 yards gets you on the list. But I think he was already in the public consciousness for a guy who it seemed like his role was expanding every year with the Jets. He was getting more and more opportunities. He'd been probably a borderline guy on this list, whether he deserved it or not, for the last couple of years up there in New York. And then finally had this year where he does rush for 1,000 yards, where outside of the Jaguars game and the week after or whatever it was, he was really good last year for the New York Jets. And it's New York, and that's a team that was competing for a playoff spot late into December.
Team.
Right. I mean, they were a team that was in the spotlight throughout the majority of the season. So I'm not shocked that Chris Ivory's the guy that's getting that kind of on.
Tony, not only fifth in the league, but as Tyler pointed out before the show this morning, he was number one in the AFC. He led the AFC in rushing last year. One of the two conferences, or only two. And I think McFadden gets hurt because of the perception and the reality of Dallas's offensive line being as good as it is. The feeling is anyone, if they stay reasonably healthy, which McFadden surprisingly did last year, can go for 1,000 yards. Now he averaged 4.6 a carry. You look at his raw numbers versus Latavius Murray, McFadden's a little bit more impressive, a little bit more explosive last year, but also had the offensive line. I don't think either one of those guys in the top 100 players. I think Devontae Freeman will get in there because he had such a where it seemed like week after week after week after week, this guy was putting up eye-popping numbers when he got the opportunity. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Devontae Freeman in there. And Gurley, Martin, and Peterson will certainly be in the top 100 as well, I believe, based on the years that they had. Doug Martin's had two pretty big seasons out of his four in the National Football League right now. So regardless, Chris Ivory gets in there, and I think, as we mentioned, that running style is an attractive style. It's a man style, right? It's, hey, I'm gonna square you up. There's not a whole lot of pretense to it. I'm not going to try to fake you out all that much. Once in a while, I'll try to make a guy miss. But more often than not, I'm content to see who's the tougher, stronger hombre when we meet one-on-one in the hole. And more often than not, that seems to be Chris Ivory with a violent running style. So, again, there he is. Kudos to him for cracking the top 100. The other guys in the range, that they released last night on NFL Network was 71 to 80. And a lot of newcomers in this range that weren't ranked in the top 100 last year. And again, I think the players, what do we say, they voted on the top 20 or 25 guys?
20 or 25, yeah.
So, you know.
In December.
You've got to get a lot of mentions just to get on the, I guess, put it this way, maybe not. If you get mentioned on a few lists, that might be enough to get you in the top 100, right? Because there's got to be a lot of duplication of some of the same players in everyone's top 20. And, you know, did everyone vote for Ryan Khalil, for instance, who came in 79th, right? Some sure did, right? Obviously, he's on the list, but it probably doesn't take a ton to get you on here if you're mentioned on some of those top 20 lists out there. Derek Johnson, the linebacker for the Chiefs, who's really had a really nice career in Kansas City and keeps on trucking. Everyone's waiting for him to hit the wall age-wise, hasn't done it yet. He comes in at 80. Ryan Khalil, as we mentioned, the center for the Carolina Panthers at 79. Then Chris Ivory. Jordan Reed. Tony, is Jordan Reed anywhere near this list prior to last year? He couldn't stay healthy, right? Had a very good rookie season, and his problem has been, and we missed a couple of games last year too, but in 14 games he was so productive for the Washington Redskins. He is basically the featured receiver in that offense with Kirk Cousins at the helm. I think he fits Kirk Cousins' game. Of course, the former Florida Gator, Jordan Reed.
Who would you take at their prime part of their careers, healthy, in shape, Julius Thomas or Jordan Reed?
I'd probably take Julius Thomas because he's done it more. And you say healthy. I mean, can you count on Jordan Reed staying healthy? Because he's had one of his big issues has been concussions.
Right.
And those are things that.
Can I erase the concussions?
Right. If you never had an injury concern, if you're just talking about if you knew a guy was going to stay healthy for 16 games,
correct, yeah.
That's a tougher call. I don't think people realize, or maybe they do, how good Jordan Reed has been when he's been healthy in the National Football League. He's been exceptional, really. And they're very similar guys in that I don't know how many blocks you're asking either one of these guys to throw.
Right, they're pass catchers.
That's not why they're making their money. So I think Julius this year, a healthy season, I think he is one of the guys we're not talking about on this football team because there's so many guys to be excited about right now for the first time in a long time. We've got this guy and that guy and the other guy and players on defense and all these new faces and returning guys and what can they do. And Julius Thomas is a bit of a letdown because he wasn't healthy last year, so the numbers weren't there and they didn't get into rhythm. Didn't seem like Blake got into rhythm with him as quickly as you'd like to have seen. But go back, dial it back, Tony, to the offseason last year. And
he's the best player on the
field. Unanimous. Everyone would have voted for Julius Thomas as the offseason MVP of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I'm hoping for big things out of Julius Thomas this year. Now, the number's probably not going to be what they were in Denver because Peyton Manning threw 55 touchdowns that one year. So, you know, we've all talked about, hey, Blake brings it down by about a half dozen touchdowns, but he also brings down the interceptions by about a half dozen or so. We'd take that. Linville Joseph, the defensive tackle formerly with the Giants, now with the Minnesota Vikings, popped into the list from going from unranked to 76. Jamal Charles, another injury-plagued season. He got a lot of credit for his reputation. He was ranked 12th following the 2014 season and tumbled all the way to number 75. That'll happen when you get banged up. And, you know, not only get banged up, but Charkandrick West and Spencer Ware came in and kept that running game going pretty well. They went on a 10-game winning streak, basically, without Jamal Charles, Tony. So he may be lucky that he made it in at 75. Emmanuel Sanders was 95th last year. And I think gets more credit now because people are wondering, is he a product of Peyton Manning, right? Is this what it is, right? And I think Emmanuel Sanders showed you last year he was actually the more reliable of the two between himself and Demaryius Thomas. Now, I think Demaryius Thomas will outpace him in this poll because people will look at them and say, wow, the physical gifts that he has.
But again, it's December is when this thing happened.
Sure.
And that's when Demaryius started to wilt.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Because he was really bad through the last like 3-4 weeks of the year, and in the postseason, he was the disappearing man.
Harrison Smith, the young safety for the Vikings, a lot of people like Harrison Smith now. He's 73rd on this, coming in from unranked. Doug Baldwin, here's the story of a half season. Tony, when you talk about dynamic playmakers at the top of a wide receiver depth chart around the National Football League, who is the guy, if you're picking either fantasy-wise, reality-wise, if you're going to start your squad with a wide receiver, and I can give you the number one on every team, and Doug Baldwin would have counted as the number one in Seattle, he might have been the 32nd guy picked last year.
Close.
Right? Yeah. I mean, he would have been in that neighborhood. He would have been in the mid-20s and down from that point on. And Doug Baldwin, what happened, as we know, Marshawn Lynch gets hurt. They rely more on the passing game. Thomas Rawls gets hurt. And more goes on Russell Wilson. Jimmy Graham gets hurt. Doug Baldwin's getting force-fed the football, and he responded in a huge way, had a huge second half of the season. It was ridiculous what Doug Baldwin did in the second half of the year.
He had 10 touchdowns in four games.
In a four-game stretch.
In a four-game stretch. 366 yards, 21 catches, 10 touchdowns.
I mean, every single week, Doug Baldwin was a highlight. But this goes to show you, in fantasy, and I'm not saying fantasy equates to reality, but fantasy owners want
right.
guys who are emerging. Doug Baldwin sat on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues in 12, 14-team leagues till halfway through the season. And then, Doug Baldwin had a good week. I got some bye week issues. Let me pick him up, plug him in. Oh, he had another good week. I'll hang on to him for one more week. And then it got to a point where you could not sit Doug Baldwin
yeah.
for anyone.
I wonder how much higher Doug Baldwin would have been on the list if it was a poll that was taken at the end of the regular season. If you go back and look at the kind of role he was on, Tyler mentioned some of the numbers there, starting in week 11 for them, 6 for 145, 3 touchdowns against Pittsburgh, 5 for 94, 2 touchdowns against Minnesota. Minnesota's pretty darn good defensively. Against Baltimore, 6 for 82, 3 touchdowns. Against Cleveland, 4 for 45, 2 touchdowns. Then against St. Louis, 8 for 118 and a touchdown, and then end of the season with 5 for 46. So he had that stretch. It was all in the last month and a half of
right.
the year. And I wonder if the poll was done like that between week 12 and 13, right? Because he's just gone
the top
for
50, probably.
Right. He had 5 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks at that point in time. And honestly, it's probably the only reason he's on the list is because he got hot right before they were asking the players, you know, who are the top 25 players in this league? Because, like you said, there aren't a whole lot of people talking about Doug Baldwin
no.
until he scored 10 touchdowns in a month. No one was talking about Doug, and then all of a sudden he was a hot name. I do wonder how much higher he would have been.
Right, and you know, you go back even, it really started in week 9 when he went for 7 for 134 and a touchdown versus Arizona. And that you mentioned the final stats of the last game. Well, Seattle beat Arizona 36-6, so they got everybody out of there.
Yeah.
Right. So he hung around probably for a quarter and a half. And then got off the field. So Doug Baldwin got some recognition there at number 72. And Calais Campbell went up from 99 to 71. Calais Campbell may be deserving of a higher spot on this list as well. You talk about 3-4 defensive ends in the National Football League. I don't know if you can name a guy other than J.J. Watt that you like more than Calais Campbell as a 3-4 defensive end. There may be one that it's going right off the top of my head I'm missing. But he is an impactful player, huge player, who's got quickness, strength. He's got it all. Calais Campbell, a hell of a player, and he moved up from 99 to number 71. So far, your three Jaguars, Allen Hurns, Telvin Smith, and Chris Ivory, fully expecting Allen Robinson to be a mortal lock in the top 70 now. Is it Malik Jackson or could it be Blake Bortles? That, I guess, is the mystery that's still hanging out there. By the way, the question of the day, the official question of the day, is based on what the boys in Vegas have to say about the Jags' expected win total this year. The Jaguars are an over-under team at 7.5. If you want to bet the over, you got to go over 7.5. If you want to bet the under, it's got to be under 7.5. It's that simple, right? So we took all the teams that are on that number, and that includes Atlanta, Chicago, Tampa Bay, Washington, and now the L.A. Rams, along with the Jacksonville Jaguars, six teams that are projected with an over-under of 7.5 by the boys in Vegas. And you rank those six teams in order of who you think will garner the most wins this year. Just put them in the order you think you expect them to win the most.
And have you checked the results for the poll question lately?
Is it tight?
It started out a 65-35 split, and the question was which Jaguars running back will have the most impactful season in 2016. Ivory was at 65 when it first started out, and now he's down to about 53, so it's getting close to a 50-50 split.
There you go. I don't want to tie particular political candidates to these guys because I don't want people to vote or not vote for them because of that, so I'll keep my mouth shut as far as that goes. But it is very close, 140 votes in so far, so we'll leave that up there today. On Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, and the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010, talking Jags and the NFL at large, both on the phone lines and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Tony, Vegas likes Jags a little bit more than they did both the last several years and earlier in the offseason. They bumped up their over-under win total to 7.5 right now, the line. If you want to bet the Jags, and you do have to bet more if you go over, as Jeff Prosser said, they probably like the Jags to go over because you have to risk more to win that. Your return, if you bet $100 on the Jags to win 7 or fewer games, you make $125 back, right? If you bet $150 to win 8 or more games, you only get $100 back. So the odds are significantly stacked in your favor to bet the under, but is that going to come through? I mean, that shows you there's some bullishness for the Jaguars.
No doubt, and especially considering the fact that Vegas has not been very bullish on the Jags for the last couple years.
And
a lot of fans around here have been, and we've seen the way those things have gone. I mean, the 2012 season, was it, where everyone kind of expected, okay, here's the year where they're going to take this next big step forward. They had drafted Blackman. It felt like some of the pieces were falling into place on the offensive side of the ball, and then the bottom collapsed on this Jaguars team. I remember a lot of conversation. I can't remember how many games they won in 2011, but it was 5 or 6 that they won in 2011, and looking at what they had done in the 2012 offseason, it was like, well, there's no way they're winning less than that.
Right.
In this upcoming year. What is Vegas talking about? There's no way they're going to win fewer games than they did last year, and it turns out they were much worse in 2012 than they were the year before.
Well, about a month ago, about April, early April, that first week of April, when the first Vegas lines were posted for the over-unders, the Jaguars' initial line was set at 6. So
right.
They've already moved up to 7.5 now.
Right. And you know, I look at this, and initially, because I'm a stickler for this kind of thing, I remember getting on Vito Stellino's case, not getting on his case, but mentioning to him a few years ago, this is going back maybe 10 years, Vito predicted in the Times Union, and probably still does, the record of every team, how many wins every team in the NFL would get. So I sat there and I said, all right, well, there are only 256 games. Every team plays 16 games, but they played against somebody else. So there are 16 times 16 games, 256. Trust me on that, okay, on the schedule. You can count them up week by week if you want to. That includes with the bye week factored in. So win totals and loss totals have to add up to 256 and 256 unless you're projecting ties.
Right.
There has to be a cumulative record of 500. If someone wins, someone's losing. And
even with the ties, the record's going to be 500.
Correct, because each team gets credit for like a half win and a half
right.
loss in there. And Vito's like, well, what do you want me to do? You know, predict every game? Well, that's, if you're predicting the win totals.
Yeah.
And I'm just using Vito as an example, all right? It's a tough endeavor to do. So I looked, and I expected Vegas to be way over the 256 when you added up all the over-unders. You know, basically the line that they're saying they're going to win right on this line, basically. And it's really not that far off, Tony. I think I came up with something like 262 games if you include all the halves in there. And as Tyler pointed out, well, the Jags went from 6 to 7.5. So some of these had changed. Maybe when they opened up, they were right on that 256 number. And then since then, as they adjust, they kind of throw out the window of trying to keep up with that where they are. But I was actually impressed that they were so close to the overall total. But I figured it would be over, if anything, because I think people are just generally more optimistic at this time of year. Everyone wins the draft, right? Unless you're the Eagles and you gave away all your picks. But even they think they won the draft because they got Carson Wentz. Actually, the Eagles hate everything, so the fans do anyway. So, but you get the point, right? Most teams are saying, all right, we just got an influx of either new free agents, new draft picks.
Everybody thinks they're better.
We're better, right? Yeah. We're better, so we're going to be a little bit bullish.
And it's not beyond Vegas to prey on that a little bit, considering I don't know that it's clearly not all their money. There are people who gamble on this stuff kind of professionally. They go out and they look at these odds and they say, this is where I can make some money on this. And then there's a bunch of people who just vacation in Vegas here over the course of the next 4 months and say, let me put down $25 on the over-under on the Titans because right. I'm a Titans fan. And
sure.
I think a lot of it is that, too, and to prey a little bit on the bullishness of fan bases. Look, it's a money-making venture, and if Vegas feels like they can make money putting a number at, say, 7.5 instead of 7 when it comes to the Jaguars, then that's what they're going to do. And they'll make whatever money they can and continue to try to encourage people to bet the under because it sounds like Vegas thinks it's going to go over 7.5.
And by the way, note for Titan fans, I don't believe that most casinos are footwear optional. So just keep that in mind as you're traveling out there to Las Vegas, Nevada, in your covered wagon
plenty
or whatever.
Plenty of mayonnaise out there, though.
There is
plenty of mayonnaise.
Rivers of mayo out there in the desert. Just rivers of mayo. If you could grow crops on mayo, it would be a veritable
garden.
You can
spoon feed yourself some mayo.
It would be fantastic. Tony, let me give you the teams that are also projected. This is part of the question of the day to kind of rank them. Just give me who wins more, Jags or this team in 2016. We'll start with, let me see if I get the list up in front of me. Here it goes. I'll start with the Atlanta Falcons. Jags or Falcons, who wins more? And obviously, the schedule impacts it, but without breaking down the schedule of each team, what does your gut tell you there?
I think it's really close. I'll give the edge to the Jags just because they're further into this rebuild than Atlanta is.
Yeah, I think the Atlanta Falcons started off playing over their heads last year, and I don't think they were as good as they looked early, but I don't think they were as bad as they looked later in the season either.
I was looking at the numbers. You know, a lot of criticism came on Chris Ivory because of that short stretch he had. He went 17 for 41 against New England, 15 for 17 against Oakland, then 23 for 26 against Jacksonville. And other than that, he was really good last season. When you go look at the numbers for Devontae Freeman, who we were talking about earlier in the show today, how about this stretch to end the year? 14 for 47, 12 for 40, 25 for 56, 22 for 73, 25 for 76.
Right, not anything
to. Now, he was still
a
good receiver
right.
out of the backfield, which makes up for it, especially if you were a fantasy owner.
And he was getting in the end zone a lot, which I think catches players' attention
The offense really slowed down in the last month and a half of the season last year for Atlanta for whatever reason. I don't know if it was just Julio Jones was too tired to carry him anymore or what the deal was, considering he felt like the entire passing game, and hopefully they got some of that fixed.
I'm going to say Atlanta. I'm going to give Atlanta the slight edge over Jacksonville if I had to pull the trigger on one. They were 1-5 in the division last year. I don't think they'll be as bad in the NFC South.
And how about that one win against Carolina?
How about that, right? The one win against the best team in the league. So if you get that split again, if you're the Falcons, I think they'll find a way to win a game or two against the New Orleans Saints and the Tampa Bay Bucks this year. All right, so that's the Atlanta Falcons. What about the Chicago Bears?
Jaguars.
I feel pretty confident in the Jags over the Chicago Bears in that as well. I think they're at best the third best team in their division, possibly the worst team in their division. The Bears, they were last year record-wise. I understand the Jags' position in their division as well. I just think the Jags made bigger strides going forward. Bears lose Matt Forte, for instance, who lose Martellus Bennett. And look, they added some pieces, some younger players on defense and in the draft. They got Leonard Floyd in there. They got Danny Trevathan.
Kevin White's finally going to play.
Kevin White,
probably.
But we don't know what he's going to do, but he should make his professional debut this year. But I'll take the Jags over the Chicago Bears right now in a head-to-head. The L.A. Rams, who you got?
L.A.
You got L.A. Tell me why.
I do feel like they've built the pieces there on that defense, especially that defensive line. I still feel good about their secondary, so I think defensively they're going to be really strong. You get a completely healthy Todd Gurley to start the year. I get there's not a ton of weapons for that team on the offensive side of the ball, but I think San Francisco is terrible. That ought to be two wins for them there. I think they can find a way, potentially. They've always played Seattle tough, so if you assume they split with Seattle and find some way to split with Arizona, you're talking about four wins right there, and I think they can find four on the rest of their schedule or five.
I'm going to go with the Jags. I don't think I'm homering up here. I think rookie quarterback is the main reason. I don't know if Goff is going to be ready in that division. They went 4-2 in the division as it was. I just don't know if there's a whole lot of room for upside with the divisional record with the L.A. Rams. So I'm going to go Jags over the Rams in that circumstance. What about the Buccaneers?
Yeah,
you get the sense that the Bucs are really a team on the rise as well. And they did beat the Jags head-to-head. They actually had a better record than the Jags last year. So, it's tough without breaking down the schedule. But to me, that's more of a toss-up than any of the other ones that we've had so far. And if I had to, I'd probably err on the side of caution to go with the Buccaneers.
I think I probably would, too.
All right, and then finally, the Washington Redskins, division champions last year at 9-7 in the NFC East. Who you got?
It's funny. The RG3 gets out of the way, and they win the division. But it's hard. I mean, they won 9 games last year. I don't see how they got a whole lot worse. So, Washington.
Maybe slightly. Getting the edge on that. Although, I think the division around them will be better this year. If Tony Romo plays the whole season, for instance, they went 4-2 against the NFC East last year, the Washington Redskins. But, hey, Vegas knows what they're doing.
What'd they do against Dallas? I don't even remember.
I'm guessing they probably swept them. But I might be wrong. They could have split. I'd have to look. I don't think I've got the schedule of the Redskins right up in front of me right here. I've got the 2016, here we go, 2015 schedule, and then we'll take a timeout. We got this state in football and the Honda drive around the NFL right around the corner. They beat Dallas in the second-to-last game of the season, and actually they split. They lost to them 19-16. They lost to Matt Cassel and company.
Oh.
And then they beat Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore threw for 435 on them, though.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he was more than solid that day. Who started Kellen Moore in Week 16 in their fantasy championship game?
You were, holy cow,
well rewarded, you risk taker, you. All right, taking a break here. Coming back this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, time for a little history lesson. This date in football, May 19th. Let's go back to 1935, Tony. The NFL voted to institute something new to the league. What did they vote on in 1935 that they would be bringing into the league in 1936?
Helmets.
How about the draft? Okay. They had maybe better helmets. I think they've always had some manner of helmets along the way, but the NFL voted on having an annual college draft beginning in 1936. Back then, it was, and I went back and looked at the complaints, in the Wikipedia article, which is always spot on. Mm. But basically, a handful of teams either had the most money or the longest winning legacies, and all these other teams. Everyone says now, you can do away with the draft, and we just, people would go wherever the money is. Well, whoever's willing to spend the money, I guess, sure, was getting all the players back pre-1936.
It's funny reading about early draft stuff, especially with the way that it works now and all the hidden information, and nobody's really talking about what they actually think about anybody for the 5 months leading up to the NFL draft, considering there's talk that it used to be basically they just read news reports about how good or bad these players were, because there was no tape, there was none of that stuff. You basically just had to rely on the media to tell you how good a guy was or wasn't.
You know what? At the time, they said the Giants were one of the forerunners because they started subscribing to out-of-town newspapers. Honestly, and that is how they did scouting back in the 1930s. Birthdays for this date, 1949, Archie Manning was born. He turned 67. Tony, describe Archie Manning as a player, based on everything you hear about Archie Manning.
He was kind of a scrambler, kind of wild man quarterback.
But you hear good player, bad team, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what you hear with Archie Manning. Was Archie Manning good? Was he really good? I mean, come on. I know the Saints were pitiful and a joke of an organization. The guy didn't throw more touchdowns than interceptions in a season until his seventh year in the league. Archie Manning started 139 games as a quarterback. How many games did he win as a starting quarterback?
139, 58.
35! He was 35, 101, and 3. Archie Manning stunk.
That's
okay?
Really good in the history of the Saints.
He was terrible. That's a terrible quarterback who played for a long time.
That's a Saints Hall of Famer right there.
Now, apparently it is. Born in the state in 1956. Let's test the young man, Tyler Devitt. Tyler Devitt, I need a nickname for Jack Thompson, please. Jack Thompson.
Jack Thompson.
He was the third overall pick of the Bengals in 1979, played quarterback for the Bengals and the Buccaneers in the early 80s.
I have two guesses. I'm going to say the Jack Hammer or simply JT.
That's not bad. Jack Hammer would be nice. He was from the American Samoa. Does that help at all?
I know Tim Duncan's from there. That's it.
He's from the Virgin Islands, Tim Duncan is.
Oh, okay, never mind.
The throwing Samoan, Jack Thompson, turned 60 today. The throwing Samoan. Chris Doering, Jaguars' sixth-round pick in 1996, scored 17 touchdowns as a senior at the University of Florida. Didn't stick with the Jags, played for Indy, Denver, Washington, and Pittsburgh in a six-year career, now doing radio over in Gainesville. Turns 43 today. And happy birthday to Jaguar tight end Mercedes Lewis. Mercedes, 32 years young today, 331 grabs in his Jaguars career for just over 4,000 yards and 27 touchdowns. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Adam Schefter of ESPN is reporting that a source is telling him that the NFL believes that the Ravens knew the rules regarding non-contact in practices at this point in the offseason. Jameson Hensley, who covers the team for ESPN Nation, is saying that a team source told him the Ravens didn't believe that a rookie minicamp fell under the same rules as organized team activities, and that they actually pulled the players off the field once they were informed that they were in violation of the CBA. By players' union rep Benjamin Watson with the Ravens. We mentioned the story yesterday on the Honda Drive, the Ravens being investigated for using full pads at a rookie minicamp practice. The penalties would include a $100,000 fine for head coach John Harbaugh, a $250,000 fine for the team, and the canceling of their next week of OTA. So that story continues to develop. The Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison apparently wanted to record a recent surprise drug test he was given, and was informed that he nor any other player is allowed to record the testing process. Pro Football Talk wanted to know why. NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy told them, basically, it's because they don't want players who could get caught by the testing to be able to study and try to learn ways that they can manipulate the process. As they pointed out, has happened with the 2008 Russian some kind of sports team.
They held a hole in the wall of the lab. Did you hear that? I mean, they passed the dirty urine out the hole, and someone handed them the clean urine back in the hole.
Yeah, and they pointed out, like, details they had to know, like, what types of cups and labels they were using on these things to figure it out. So they don't want players to know, so you're not allowed to record the process. And the Chicago Bears and defensive end Willie Young, who was a name we talked about a lot in free agency here in Jacksonville a couple of years ago before he signed a three-year deal with the Bears. According to multiple sources, Willie Young and the Bears have apparently begun negotiations on a contract extension. Young is currently set to become a free agent after this season. He has 16.5 sacks the last 2 years after signing that contract with Chicago, including a 10-sack season in 2014.
Yeah, did a nice job considering that they switched him to outside linebacker from defensive end last year up there with the Chicago Bears. Got this in on the text line driven by Duval Ford. We're talking about Julius Thomas earlier. I meant to get to this last segment, but as often happens, we run out of time. Don't understand how Julius Thomas didn't have a decent year. Well, I don't think we said he didn't have a decent year. I think disappointing based on the expectations I had. And is it his fault that he's hurt? I'm not putting blame. I'm just saying the bottom line is I had hoped for a more complete, impactful season from Julius Thomas last year than the Jags got. I'm not pointing the finger of blame here, but he said he had 455 yards and 5 touchdowns, would have had more yards and TDs if he wasn't hurt the first part of the year. His year was decent. Again, I don't think we said he didn't have a decent year. I was looking for more than decent. However, you compare that to the prior season in Denver where he played 13 games. He played 12 games with 11 starts here last year. In Denver, the year before, he played 13 with 10 starts. He was really playing hurt the final maybe month and a half of the season. And the receptions were similar, 43 to 46. The yardage was similar, 489 to 455. But he scored 12 touchdowns compared to 5 here. Much more impactful. Again, I'm not expecting those numbers. But the year before that, Tony, he was a 65-catch, 788-yard guy. I think he can be that here in Jacksonville. I really do. Now, the question is, can he be that with the continued emergence of the Allens at wide receiver?
Sure.
If Marquise Lee is healthy, if Rashad Green continues to improve, you've got some competent running backs. There are only so many footballs to go around.
Right,
so,
on a team that wants to have to throw the ball less.
Correct.
Than they have for the last couple of years especially. But, look, I agree with you. I think he can have that kind of impact on the offense. I know we were talking earlier in the show, too, comparing Julius Thomas specifically to Jordan Reed, and Tyler actually asked us if we could have them both healthy, which guy would we take? And you look at those numbers for Julius Thomas the last 3 years, Jordan Reed entering the fourth year of his NFL career this year, caught 87 passes for 952 and 11 touchdowns last year. If you look before that, 45 and 50 catches his first 2 years for around 500 yards, both of those. Really where they separate is the touchdown numbers, and that's how much of that is Peyton Manning and just what that Broncos offense was doing, and how much of that is what he's been dealing with if you're Jordan Reed in Washington for the first 3 years of his career. Not only his own injury problems, but really inconsistent play from the quarterback position up until this year.
No question about it, and that's not a knock on Julius. I mean, we're just saying that Jordan Reed is probably, you know, if you knew he was going to stay healthy, and that's the question you never know with any of these guys. He has been a playmaker big time for those folks over there. Oh, look, 60 catches, 650 yards, something like that. I'm not talking about, you know, I don't expect Julius Thomas to catch 80-plus balls for 1,200 yards and score double-digit TDs, but 60 for 650 with 8 touchdowns, right? That, to me, seems like, wow, yeah. that's a big year for a tight end in the National Football League.
No doubt.
So there you have it. We've got Gus Bradley, this is him talking about back in November, the lack of red zone production at the time that they had seen from Julius Thomas.
A lot of it is, I think, that you got to go off your reads, too, you know, on the progression. And it might be where he's taken away early in the progression. And, you know, we've got a lot of guys down there that have the ability to make plays in the red zone. A guy like Allen Robinson and Hearns. And, you know, so, you know, you try to position it. You try to attack what the defense has shown. And then you go through your progression, and sometimes those reads take you to them, and sometimes they don't. So, you know, like we said, that one where it was set up for Hearns, you know, and there are others set up for Julius, like that one that he did have. So a lot of it has to do with the progression and defensively what we're seeing.
All right, there you go. That's Gus Bradley. And, again, many factors that went into it, but I think had Julius never gotten hurt in the preseason, right? Did I say hurting?
You did.
Did I? He never gotten hurting, everybody. Had Julius stayed healthy in the preseason, I think that you would have seen numbers more in line with what we're talking about. It's not that far off, really.
No.
And, you know, 5 touchdowns to 8 touchdowns, you know, 40-something to 60 catches. I think those numbers would have fleshed themselves out, and I think he would have been more the focal point down in the red zone early. And once, by the time he got in there, Blake already had it rolling with some of these wide receivers, and why would you slow down throwing the football to those guys as well? And, you know, he was hitting some longer shots as well down the field, taking away some of those red zone opportunities. But regardless, I like the fact that we're sitting here trying to figure out how we can split the football up between all these playmakers potentially that the Jags have.
Man. Yeah, and it's kind of funny. You know, we're asking the question today with all the teams that are basically at 7.5 wins to kind of rank them.
Yep.
As far as like a power ranking, basically, we're asking the fans to participate in that. And I know here in a moment, NFL.com just put up their projections for the starters in the division. And when we started talking about, all right, how do you feel about the expectations for the Jags compared to X, X, and X team? With kind of the same expectations from a Vegas standpoint, I kind of get the same feeling when I look at the lineup on paper for the first time of the projected starters for this Jaguars team. It's one of those things where we've been talking about it now for a while, a couple weeks basically since the draft. It's the first time I've seen it written down, and it's kind of like, oh.
That's not bad, right?
You're like, oh, okay.
Oh, and by the way, one of the top 100 players in the NFL is not even projected to make the starting lineup for this team.
Right.
Sorry, Chris. By the way, vote on the Twitter poll at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. We've all tweeted it out or retweeted it. Which Jaguar running back will have the most impactful season in 2016? Nearing 200 votes, and it is just about as close as it can get. We'll give you an update on where things stand on that. So add your vote to the tally. We'll leave that up there throughout the course of the day. And we'll see what you think about which guy. And look, you know, I know there's some Jaguar fans already replying like, I hope they both have great seasons. Well, we do too, but just pick one. Who do you think's going to have the more impactful season? It's not a slight to the other guy, all right? So we'll look at what NFL.com projects to be the starting lineup for the Jags and how accurate we think they are. Plus, we'll hear a little bit from Kelvin Beachum. He's going to battle for that left tackle spot, and he joined J.P. Shadrick and the crew over on Jaguars.com Live yesterday, so we'll have a couple of snippets from that. We encourage you to always check out that show, either live or as it's archived on Jaguars.com. They do a hell of a job John Oger, JP, and the entire crew over there getting that content pumped out on a weekly basis. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, along with Tyler Devitt at the Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's go to Twitter now. You might recognize this handle.
Yeah, do we have to do this?
At Elbow70. Hey, KB, it's me, Luke. What's for dinner?
I don't know. Well, I take that back. You know, I've been on a meal plan since I've gotten here, so I'm having a Mexican meatloaf and broccoli tonight. That's what's for dinner.
You haven't even had lunch yet. You're already planning dinner. Is that how it works?
Hey, I'm very structured. I got meals planned for, you know, at least throughout the weekend.
Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Mexican meatloaf.
What is that?
I've never had Mexican meatloaf. Have you, Tyler? Any ever heard
is
of Mexican
just like,
meatloaf?
Is it meatloaf wrapped in a tortilla? Like, how does this work?
I don't think it's that. I'm guessing. Maybe, does it have like some kind of salsa on top or, you know, mixed into it? You know, it's like when you make a meatloaf, a lot of times you put ketchup in the mix, right? Maybe you've got salsa in there. I don't know. I'm thinking like corn or
maybe
something
you just
like
throw
that.
In some sriracha, maybe? I don't know. Hacker style? I don't know.
Dude, sriracha. I like sriracha. Right. That could be it. But
so much sriracha.
There's so much. I like basically a big bowl of sriracha, and I like to let my lettuce go swimming at the very bottom of that little sriracha lake that I create. That's Kelvin Beecham yesterday, Jaguars.com Live. Those guys do a great job over there. We encourage you to check them out every Wednesday and catch the archived podcast, I guess you would say, if you want to go back in on Jaguars.com and all the programming. The Jaguars program, including Jaguars today. We appreciate the guys over there with the digital team getting us posted in a timely fashion. Kelvin Beecham on there yesterday. Not a lock to start, Tony, and he talked about that with the guys. Said, hey, this is the left tackle job is his to earn.
You got to get reps. You can't just show up in this league and just show up and be like, well, I'm the starter. No, you got to put reps in. You got to put time in. A lot of hard work and a lot of dedication that still needs to take place before those goals of mine are met. So right now, just putting, you know, days on top of days, stacking days on top of days to get to where I need to get.
It's fascinating, the contract that they signed him to. I can't remember another one quite like it. Can you? Where a team had basically a whole second contract set up based on this 1 year. If we like what we see,
right,
4 years, $40 million. If we don't like what we see, nothing, right? Bupkis, there's no in between. Now they could try to work something out for a lower rate, but I think he's either going to play here, Kelvin Beecham, in 2017 as part of a 4 year, $40 million deal, or he's not playing here. I think it's that simple. It's
from a Jaguars perspective, yes.
Jags would love to pay him 4 years, $40 million. It means he's come in and earned the job and played well as your starting left tackle.
No doubt about it, and obviously it's going to be a competition. He talked a little bit about that there. He was also asked about how he's approaching that competition with Luke Jokel.
Well, just from a mindset standpoint, I can worry about what I can control. I can control only what I can control. There are external factors and things that I can't control that I'm not worried about. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about my knee, worried about my body being ready, worried about, you know, whoever I got to play a lineup against, and against Green Bay, how am I going to defeat them? And my big thing is keeping, you know, Blake clean. You know, that's all I care about. I've said that a number of times as interviews and things that have come out about, you know, how I feel about the situation that I'm in. And it also be a good teammate. You know, the team comes first. You know, when you play a team game, the team comes first. So whatever I have to do to be the best contributor to the Jacksonville Jaguars, that's what I'm here to do.
Well, according to NFL.com, at least Kevin Patra, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but
Kevin.
Kevin P. over at NFL.com covered the AFC South for a story they're doing that each day they're projecting another division's set of starters who will start on both sides of the football, offense, defense. They leave special teams out of the mix, but you get it. And they do project that Kelvin Beecham will win the left tackle job. I think I'll give them this, Tony. Sometimes national writers or pundits are a little bit out of touch with the local scene. And I'm not saying that we always know everything, but I think they did an outstanding job projecting. If I were to project a three receiver set, who the likely starting lineup for the Jaguars is, I think I might have gone with this exact thing. Now you could say, well, they're going to play a lot of two tight ends, so maybe you throw Mercedes in there as a co-starter along with Julius Thomas. But assuming you're going three wide receivers, which you'll play plenty of, Blake Bortles, obviously your quarterback. They go with Yeldon over Ivory. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
I do too. To start the season, right? Yeldon will get the first carry of the season. Does he start more games than Chris Ivory? I think he might, you know, and maybe Ivory's kind of like the closer. They're going to work in tandem. I think their carry totals can both be between 180 and 220, somewhere in that mix. And if they are, I think the Jags are happy. Game flow might dictate Yeldon gets a few more carries. Ivory gets a few more carries. By the way, that's our poll question of the day. Which one of these guys will have a bigger impact on the Jaguars season this year? Let me update. It was stunningly close last time I checked here. Let me get to the tally right now. Which Jacksonville Jaguar running back will have the most impactful season in 2016? 215 votes in so far. Chris Ivory, 53% to T.J. Yeldon's 47%. When we went to break, it was 51-49. So a little push there for Chris Ivory. You've got all day to vote if you haven't. At MD_1010XL. It's tweeted out on the 1010XL account, Tony's and Tyler's as well, so jump in on that. All right, so we agree. Bortles, Yeldon, Allen Robinson, Hearns, no question about
it. No doubt.
Third receiver. They go with Marquise Lee over Rashad Green. Agree, disagree?
Agree. That I think that's what they want it to be.
I think that's what they want it to be.
And we'll see if Marquise Lee can stay healthy through an offseason and give them the confidence to put him on the field as kind of the first guy to be the third wide receiver for this team. Look, I don't know when everything is said and done between Marquise Lee and Rashad Green who's going to get more snaps or who's going to get have more catches, but I think they want Marquise Lee to be that guy.
Right. Now, he's got to do that. Now, it's not going to be handed to him, but tie goes to the runner. Tie goes to the guy you want to have that job, right? So, and you already have an important role for Rashad Green. Whether he's catching passes or not, he's your punt returner. And we saw how he can turn games with his ability in that regard last year. So you'd like to see Marquise Lee. This is it. Look, catching passes is what he's going to do, running the occasional reverse. So that's your three receiver set projected by NFL.com. We talked about Julius Thomas. Obviously, he's your top tight end. Kelvin Beachum, they've got at left tackle. They've got Mackenzie Bernadeau at left guard. And if I had to bet on one guy right now, I'd bet Bernadeau over Jokel.
Just
because he's got a lot of experience playing in the interior at the National Football League level.
No, I'm with you there. And they brought him in for a reason, and I think it's to push whatever that competition is going to be there on that left side of the line of scrimmage. And whether that's going to be with whoever loses the left tackle spot. Look, we've talked about this before, Mike. I think it's a little ridiculous that people have been talking like, well, whoever loses that left tackle spot's playing guard. It's not that easy. The demands on the guard position and the tackle position are completely different from an athletic standpoint and from a strength standpoint. And I don't think it's easy to say, well, whoever doesn't play tackle can just play guard for this football team. Whoever doesn't play tackle can play swing tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but I'm not sure they're going to be the starting
guard.
They'll
be in the competition. They'll be right. Look, if they prove to be the best option, fine, but I think I'm going to go with more of a guard-type body. I look at Luke Jokel, man, and I know people are saying, oh, he gets beat more on the speed rush. I don't see the push right at him, and that's what you want out of your guard, right? You want the push, especially in the running game. Oh, look, you want everything.
I would love it if he was like a Pro Bowl guard.
Look,
That'd be sweet.
If Tyler Shatley with Jeff Linkenbach could be your starting guard.
I don't care any of them,
play well, but if I had to bet on one right now, it'd be Bernadeau. So I think that's a fair projection. Linder, Can, and Parnell. Center over to right tackle. That's written in stone, I think, right now. Defensively, on the line.
Here's where it's fun.
Yeah, we went through this the other day. This is the combination we think, though, on the four-man defensive line. Jared Odrick's going to be at one end. Dante Fowler Jr. is going to be at the other. I think Malik Jackson is going to be your penetrating three technique, and we think Roy Miller is going to be your nose tackle or your run-stuffing defensive tackle, if you want to call it what, you know, I don't want to refer to it as a nose tackle.
Sure.
Whatever. Those four will be the primary combination. Heck, there'll be times, I bet, when none of them are on the field if the Jaguars' depth proves to be as good in reality as we think it is on paper right now.
Yeah, we've talked about the number of bodies they have to rotate in on that defensive line, and that, again, the idea of starter on the defensive line almost needs to be taken out of people's minds. Right, it's you look at your unit of 8 to 10 guys and what you can do to rotate these guys and the different roles that they can fill, and have they found guys that can get the job done out of that 8 to 10? And I think when you compare it to where they've been, and the defensive line, especially the interior of the defensive line, has been pretty strong for the last couple of years for this team, and now it looks like a titanic strength potentially for this football team, what they could potentially roll out, especially on those interior two spots.
I can't wait. You sub packages, man. I mean, all of a sudden you're looking at, here comes some Derek Marks and Ryan Davis on third down, for instance, right? And let's get Roy Miller and Jared Odrick off the field. Let's run Scoot up there. Let's not forget him running up there, you know, as a designated pass rusher or some. And that brings us to the linebacking core where they do project Paul Posluszny to start in the middle, Telvin Smith on one outside spot, and Miles Jack on the other. And I think that's the way it will be when it's all said and done. Miles Jack is too good a player not to be on the field as much as his body can hold up to. And right now I have no reason to think his body can't hold up to the typical rookie season any more or less than anybody else coming into the league.
No.
Long term, that's for somebody else to figure out.
If it goes bad, it goes bad. That's kind of how I'm looking at the knee at this point. And honestly, when they talk about easing Miles Jack in, it's not because he's they're worried about injuring the knee. In my mind, it's a player that hasn't played football in a year. So you're rehabbing and trying to get him back into football condition before you throw everything at that guy, more so in my mind, at least.
Your secondary is cornerbacks Devon House and Jalen Ramsey. Very logical. And they even go on in the notes to say that Prince Mukamara is likely your number three guy. So that I think that goes along. If you and I were to sit here today, who's going to play more nickel corner for this team this year? I think we'd say Mukamara. And even if you said after week four, once Colvin comes back, I think if Mukamara plays well, he's going to have the leg up early on, and Colvin's going to have his work cut out for him to get snaps in nickel packages. And then your safeties, certainly Tashawn Gibson is your starting free safety. And they go with Cyprian, who, again, if you're betting, I mean, it's not a mortal lock. I think this one's pretty close. I think Sample, we don't know. But if we can get him on the field healthy throughout the course of the summer, I think there's a chance he can take over that competition. But the hope is that Cyprian finally realizes his full potential, playing in a role that he's better suited for as a more of a close-to-the-line-in-the-box kind of safety with a back-end guy like Gibson that can erase a lot of mistakes for everybody, House and Ramsey included in that as well. So I think they did a pretty fair job projecting.
I do too. And I think when you look back, say, a year ago this time, say beginning of June, what you thought that depth chart was going to look like, obviously, when you're just looking at the back seven, right? Miles Jack isn't in there. You're talking about Scooter being in that spot, and I feel a whole lot better about Miles Jack being there than I do Scooter and Telvin Smith now going into his third year. Devon House still would have been in that list, but Jalen Ramsey would have been replaced by what? Dwayne Grotz?
Yeah.
Is the guy you're talking about on the other side, if not Demetrius McCray? And you're talking about your top three now being House, Ramsey, and Amukamara as opposed to House, Grotz, and McCray. Is the position they were in last year. Tashawn Gibson, that was Sergio Brown at this point last year. And strong safety, it's still Cyprian, but it feels like there's at least some competition there. I mean, the back end of this thing has really, really changed just the dynamic of what it could potentially be. And I already mentioned that the interior of this defensive line is going to be really difficult for opposing teams to deal with. And the question is, do they get enough out of the Leo position, which is supposed to be the pass rushing position in this defense, to take advantage of the strength that they have on the interior of that defensive line? And Fowler is a guy that I think is physically gifted enough that he should be able to bring that. We just don't know if he will.
They're already good stuff in the run last year, for the most part. All right, everybody has their games and their moments, but they were solid in getting you to third down. They couldn't get you off the field on third down. I don't expect them to go backwards on first and second down this year. They could be scary good on early downs, and competent on third down. We'd take competent right now
competent
on third down.
Competent would be nice.
But you're looking at potentially, as you went through them individually, five new starters on the defensive side of the football, and the names are pretty exciting. You got three guys who were considered top five talents in their respective drafts in the last 2 years, with Fowler, Ramsey, and Jack. And then you add a former Pro Bowler and Tashawn Gibson as your free safety, and Malik Jackson as your coveted $90 million man on the defensive line. That's not
absolutely.
That's a good talent.
Look,
to add.
I just want third and seven or eight when I'm watching the Jaguars this year to not be, okay, who are they not going to cover? Or who's going to miss a tackle? Or how long is he going to have to make a play on this particular third and long? I want third and long to feel like, all right, the Jags can make a play here and get off the football field. And last year, you never really felt that way. Inside some games, like inside the Miami game, you were like, for whatever reason, they're on. And Odrick was an animal in that game for the Jaguars. They were on third down in that game. The second half of that Indianapolis game, you felt like the Colts had no chance when they got to third down, but there were way too many games where it's just like, all right, what are they going to do to screw this thing up, despite how good a position they put themselves in? And I think they can continue to put themselves in a good position in early downs.
All right, when we come back, Tony, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you to rank the teams that Vegas has at 7.5 on the over-under line in the order of how you expect them to win games in 2016. That includes Atlanta, Chicago, Jacksonville, the L.A. Rams, the Bucks, and the Washington Redskins. We got Twitter and Facebook responses on that. And we'll leave the Twitter poll up beyond today's program, but over 235 votes already. Chris Ivory leading T.J. Yeldon, 54-46%. Amongst Jaguar fans and others participating on which running back for the Jags will have the most impact on the field in 2016. You can weigh in any of those ways. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler, Devitt here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now you know you're fat and out of shape, Tony. Many
How's
ways.
That?
Most recent one being when you get out of breath when you change your pants on the break. I had to change my pants.
Yeah, it's pretty
bad.
I
didn't mess my pants, people. I had to change them. Got a thing to do. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Can't roll out there in shorts to every event in Florida, apparently. Kind of disappointing, really. Shoes could have used some shine, too. Just letting you know. Keeping you updated on the state of my outfit. 244. That's how many votes we have right now. Chris Ivory leading T.J. Yeldon in terms of people voting on which Jaguar running back will have the most impact in 2016. 54% for Ivory, 46% for Yeldon. Now, let's take a look at the fan feedback spotlight on the Twitter side, Tony. Brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Rank the teams in order of their expected wins in 2016. We took the six teams that Vegas set the over-under at 7.5 for: Atlanta, Chicago, Jacksonville, the L.A. Rams, Tampa, and Washington. What kind of feedback are we looking at here?
Well, the team that most consistently got put ahead of the Jaguars, and there were only a handful of people that even put anybody ahead of the Jags, was the Atlanta Falcons. Some people predicting up to 10 wins for the Falcons, including Jag fan there. But Jacksonville usually came in first or second in these rankings. As we take a look at them from Brian, he had the Jaguars first. Actually, at Tampa second, Washington, Chicago, Atlanta, all the way down towards the bottom, and the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams commonly put down there because of that rookie quarterback deal from Colby. Atlanta first, Jacksonville second, Tampa, Chicago, Washington, Los Angeles. From Lauren Brooks. Hello, Lauren.
LB.
From the Jags at one, Atlanta two, Tampa, Washington, Chicago, LA. And that's pretty much the order that we got a lot was Jacksonville, Atlanta, Tampa, Washington, Chicago, L.A. seems to be the kind of expectation, at least, that people have.
Yeah, I thought people did a pretty good job not going straight homer on it, right? I mean, not everyone just said, all right, we'll start with Jacksonville and we'll go from there. Facebook-wise, you got some. Look, and I don't think it's outrageous to say Jacksonville will have the most. I mean, Vegas has all these all bunched up together for a reason. I think they're certainly capable, of winning nine games this year, maybe more. Who knows? But let's see where the Jags end up on most of these lists here. I've got Chris Moore has them number one ahead of everybody with the Rams dead last. I just don't like the rookie quarterback in that division. I know they played well with poor quarterback play, and I guess you could argue, is it going to get any worse for the Rams? Maybe not. The Bears might be the last team on my list, though. Seth went with Atlanta with 10 wins, the Jags, Washington, and the Rams all with 9, in his opinion, then the Bucks and the Bears coming up, and he said, prove me wrong, Duval, 23-0. Yes, I counted preseason. These are all hashtags. Hashtag Houston 2016. KC Callaway said Atlanta, Washington, Chicago, Tampa, then Jacksonville, then the L.A. Rams. That, I'll be quite frank with you, that'd probably be disappointing if they finish behind all those teams. Of course, if they win the division, yeah, I would hope you're not going to be disappointed too much, regardless of what the record is, because none of these teams are division opponents. Anthony had the Jags third behind Washington and Tampa. Donovan had Washington, Atlanta, and Tampa ahead of them. That's pretty close to where I have it right now. Maybe Atlanta first, Washington and the Bucks right there, just a smidge ahead of the Jags. Clifton went with Atlanta, Washington, Tampa, Chicago all ahead of the Jags, with the Rams bringing up the rear. Jason had Atlanta and Washington ahead of him. Washington and Atlanta for Joshua. So a lot of people thinking, you know, obviously Washington won a division. Atlanta, despite the big low, they started fast, had the big low. They did end up 8-8 last year, and they did beat Carolina. Garrett admitted, he said, this is difficult, and he put Jack's number one, and he put in parentheses, being a homer, Bucks, Washington, Atlanta to follow, and Kevin went with the Jags at the top as well. So, hey, look, I think, you know, you're at least you're not in the conversation of, at least we don't think you're going to be in the conversation of, well, they aren't a top three pick or a top five pick this year, right?
We're not asking the question, okay, they got all these teams bunched up at 5.5 as the over-under. Do you think they win more than Cleveland and Tennessee?
Gosh.
Which is where they've been, basically, the last couple. And Oakland. Oakland was in that list with them the last couple of years, too. And Oakland's even higher on this list this year.
Yeah. A lot of people like it. I know the boys on Midday Chalk. Somebody was talking about this either yesterday or this morning. Might have been the drill. Talking about the league. Tweeted out something about the Denver Broncos with the defense to beat in the AFC West or something like that. And the Raiders replied, they were. Something along the lines like they had been the team to beat. And then the Broncos official account had a chuckling John Elway picture, like laughing at the Raiders. But a lot of people are going to pick the Raiders to win the AFC West this year.
Yes, they will.
Flat out pick them to win the AFC West this year. And you look defensively, I don't think it's that much of a stretch when you start to look at who did the Denver Broncos lose on the defensive side of the football. Guys like Malik Jackson and Danny Trevathan. Can the Oakland Raiders close the gap? They've got the guy who may be the best individual pass rusher in the division in Khalil Mack. The Broncos have the best collective pass rush team there.
Good luck, San Diego. 6 year games this year are going to be against the defenses of Denver, Oakland, and Kansas City.
Right.
Good luck.
and we know Kansas City can certainly get after the quarterback as well. You look at what the Raiders added here, and I'll bring it up here momentarily. Don't laugh. Reggie Nelson had a hell of a year last year. I believe led all NFL safeties in interception. So he's back there in the secondary with Carl Joseph, who was the first-round pick. So they've upgraded at the safety position. They added Sean Smith, who was one of the best free agent cornerbacks on the market out there this year. They added Bruce Irvin to rush the passer from the strong side linebacker position, which he has been doing. Mario Edwards Jr. had kind of a lost season last year. They're hoping to get more out of him this year. They added Shalik Calhoun as well in the draft as a pass rusher. And still need some help, I think, in the interior. Ben Heaney doesn't strike a whole lot of fear in you. They've got a few holes, but they're getting better
sure.
on that side
and,
of the football.
And I think it's hard to judge sometimes just what a team loses when they lose a guy like Charles Woodson, who's been really, really good even late into his career, but just as the experience that he has and kind of the calming factor that he can have for a football team, along with just the athletic ability that he's had his entire life, basically. You lose that in the secondary, it's hard to replace that, and I think it's hard to judge just how difficult it is to replace that type of guy sometimes.
But, you know, you add on offense, the offense is already heading in the right direction. You add a guy like Kelechi Osemele to that offensive line, no matter who's running the ball, it's going to get easier, you would expect. Clive Walford, who I liked a lot coming out of Miami last year, you know, typical quiet rookie season as a third-round pick, not a lot of tight ends hit the ground at full sprint. And then Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree, a pretty good duo at the top of your wide receiver depth chart. So a lot of people are going to be on the Oakland Raiders, a lot of people are going to be on the Jacksonville Jaguars. We've seen that. In fact, NFL.com and the story that they did projecting the starting lineup basically called them the sleeper team this year. Who starts for the sleeper is what the title was when you went to NFL.com. If you want to check out the other division projections, they're all there in the same article. Go to NFL.com and click right on the top story, and you'll be able to find it. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us here on Jaguars Today. Tomorrow, David Garrard will be in studio with us. At least that's what's scheduled. I don't think traffic will be as bad as it was last week at the Players' Championship for Dave. So hopefully we'll get Dave in. And big news coming soon from Leon Washington. That's all I have to say about that. It's good to see him yesterday. He popped in right between programs and was bearing some goodies. And did you see the size of Leon Washington? It's staggering, right? When you compare him to a guy like me, he's just a big old lard ass. I look like an offensive tackle. How did Leon survive? And not only survive, but thrive all those years at the top level of football? You got to have the ability to make some people miss in a big way, and he definitely had that. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to Tyler Devitt. For Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Wrapping things up, another Jaguars today in the books. OTAs just a few days away, kicking off Monday. We'll be talking a lot about that throughout the next week plus right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.